You are listening to the Doug Hagman Radio Show, weekdays 9 to 10 a.m. Eastern Time. And now the man behind the mic, a private investigator with over 30 years under his belt, Doug Hagman.
Good morning, everyone. It's 6 a.m. on the West Coast of America, 9 a.m. here in the East. Welcome to Hagman. It's the Doug Hagman Investigative Hour for today, Monday, November 12th, 2018. And thanks for joining me this morning for an in-depth look at tomorrow's headlines today. Going to be talking about a number of issues. Are we headed for another Battle of Athens, 1946, McMinn County, Tennessee? I've talked about this before. You know, I guess the question is, should we redo the Battle of Athens? Should we take a lesson from our forefathers, the people that went before us, and righted the wrongs that exposed the corruption and not just exposing it, but repaired the corruption? I say yes. And if that puts me into some sort of category of whatever it might be, you know, with my broadcast, then so be it. But look, what's taking place all across the country, but the focus right now is on Broward and Palm Beach counties, Florida, with the post-election issues, the Brenda Snipes problem. But it's more than Brenda Snipes. It's the whole lot of the individuals in Broward and Palm Beach counties. It's from the Sheriff Israel, remember him, and others. To the Department of Elections, we're having problems with Pam Bondi. She finally stepped up to the plate and said, "Hey, Florida law enforcement, gotta take a look at this." But is it too little, too late? So we've got Democrat Palm Beach County refusing to make deadline in Florida governor Senate races, and in the face of record deadly fires, of course, in the West, environmental wackos want Pacific Gas and Electric to cut down fewer trees, by the way, near power lines in California, something that's an issue. We've got fires raging on both ends of our continent, different types, however. And speaking of fires, I just want to say this, in case you haven't known, or in case you don't know this, good friend of the program, good friend of mine, L.A. Marzulli and his wife, good friends, lost their house to the fires on Saturday. There is a GoFundMe. I'll put the link in the description box. Here's the GoFundMe issue, okay? Just so people understand this. And I've been through families who have lost homes to fire. A family member lost a home to fire. And here's the issue. The issue is, yeah, you've got insurance that'll cover the certain things or most of things. But you always, you're nickeled and dimed, or you're dollared and $5 to death with other issues, displacement, and so many other things. And the insurance just doesn't cover everything. I mean, I've seen it, and I've helped a family member out who lost a house to fire, and they were out of pocket, I think, $42,000, $43,000 from memory, and this is back now about 12, 14 years ago. So if we can do whatever we can to help L.A. Marzulli, GoFundMe, I'll put the link in the description box, but it's mental. I mean, the mental assault is... Man, I can't imagine. I just cannot imagine. So you've got fires in the literal fires in California. You've got political fires in the East, and really this growing conflagration all across the country politically, dynamically. And we are at this tipping point. The United States is at a tipping point. But my question to you, maybe it's more of a statement than a question, is are we ready for another Battle of Athens. And I'm not going to go through it. I went through it in the previous program. Please do me a favor, research the Battle of Athens. And I'm not talking about Wikipedia research, that garbage, editable garbage. I'm talking about the Battle of Athens as it really took place. A number of veterans coming home and finding their county is in the hands of a corrupt Democrat cabal. And they armed up. They armed up and they did something about it. They took over their county. They took over and they made everything. The situation is eerily similar to what's taking place today. And let me just say this. You're going to find, and I can guarantee you, you're going to find that bisexual, American-hating, Taliban-loving Kristen Sinema from Arizona stealing that seat. You're going to find Florida as well. The corruption there is beyond, it just defies description. And all of the news media is covering this up. Now let me say this. There was a news personality on the right, on the right. You would know his name, you would know him, and there was, how can I put this? I had a picture of Laura Loomer on my website, and this well-known right-wing personality basically refused to tweet anything about her, refused to even associate with. I'm not going to get into the details, but it was a big deal. Where, no, you know what? I'm not gonna point to your website because you got a picture of this woman, this Laura Loomer. With all due respect, and I mean this sincerely, with all due respect, she has done more in this case to expose the corruption. You might not agree with her methods. You might not agree with but you know what? She's doing something, isn't she? To disparage her, to me, is an insult. So I'm sick, and here's where I'm at today. The gloves are off. I'm done. I am absolutely flippin' done. And if you've noticed over the last, I don't know, week or so, 2 weeks, have you noticed that I'm getting really irritated? And I apologize for that irritation to you, but it is what it is. I'm irritated at all of these mousy games, people being mousy. We have to stop being mousy. We have to start taking this seriously. Don't expect us just to merely report on an issue and leave it at that. That's unacceptable. We all have skin in this game, but we have to put more skin in the game. We have to take action. We have to become activists, by definition, I suppose, but on the right side of history. We have to right the wrongs. We have to get involved. You know what? It's not comfortable because we have jobs. We have commitments. Look, I got a job. I've got commitments. I've got bills to pay, as we all do. You're in the same boat. We don't have time to go out and protest. We don't have time to do this. But you know what? At this point, we've got to make some decisions. How much money do we have set aside? Do we have the ability to take some time and to show up in solidarity and support of people like Laura Loomer down in Broward County? If the more people who are present there, the less the media can ignore us. If you have tour, I've said this before, you know, when we discussed TSA checkpoints, TSA manhandling and groping, unconstitutional in my view. If you yourself say, you know, you don't touch me, you don't do this, you know, I'll go through a magnetometer or whatever, but no, none of this backscatter x-ray or none of these x-ray machines, 3D machines, or and certainly don't feel me up. Start profiling instead of, you know, subjecting the 82-year-old wheelchair-bound grandmother to the same as you would a burqa-wearing non-citizen. Nay, if that sounds racist, homophobic, or racist, or Islamophobic, or xenophobic, so be it. It's the truth. But I'm tired of being politically correct. I will not be politically correct. I just want to be correct. Period. There's nothing hyphenated before that. So, just to sum up here what I just said, you know what? To those who disparage and to say, well, you know, people like Laura Loomer, because of their tactics, they have no credibility, or Gateway Pundit. I read that in Free Republic. You know what? Come on. What's wrong with you people? What have you done? I expect that from Democratic Underground, but Free Republic, really? You're gonna throw them under the bus because you just simply don't like their tactics or don't like them? Saying that they've got no credibility? Look at the photographic evidence and documentation. There's your credibility. Put your differences aside, you petty little people. I'm tired. I'll tell you what, I'm tired of this. I'm tired of the way things are going. So back to the Battle of Athens. When you have a group of veterans returning home and seeing that everything that they fought for, basically in World War II, and in their absence, an entire county has fallen victim to a Democratic criminal cabal. Isn't that what we're seeing today? What did they do? Did they say, well, you know what, it's just... No, they picked up arms, and they took over. They took back their county. That's what we need to do. And if you think I'm advocating for that, maybe I am. I don't know. And if that makes me some sort of domestic terrorist, well... No, you know what? The bottom line is this. We are a representative republic. And by the way, stop saying democracy. Stop it. Stop it. We are, words matter. We are a representative republic. We are not a democracy. We are a nation that was built with the Judeo-Christian principles under a government that will not function without those Judeo-Christian principles, without a solid moral, without solid morality. That's the way our country was built and was founded. And I make no apologies for any of that. And to go one step further here, since we're talking about that, look at the new Islamic candidates who are now holding office. The Palestinian woman, Minnesota, of course. And of course, Keith Ellison, as Attorney General, he's neither an attorney nor a general. A reported abuser, however, getting the vote. I'd take another look at that, by the way. But see, can this, what we're seeing today, is this not destroying our country from within? Now, look, if you want to be a Muslim adherent to Sharia law, go for it. It's just not in the United States, not under the Constitution. Sharia law, or Sharia, and the Constitution, they cannot exist, they cannot coexist, no matter how many bumper stickers you morons out there create and put on your cars. I'm sorry, it they don't fit. It's oil and water. It doesn't work that way. So we've got to do some things here. So the Hagman Report, in addition to reporting, of course, we have to have more skin in the game, and that's what we're working toward. And yes, we are working on having actual visible assets in our stead in Broward and Palm Beach counties. People that, but it all takes resources, it takes money, and I'm just saying, look, if you want to support us, great. We can do more with that support than you may think, and we appreciate that. But we are at a tipping point right now, and if we don't do something, if we just report on how this is going and how the left is stealing our country, well, then shame on us. especially if we've got the ability to go out and make make the difference. And I think we do at this point. And by the way, I don't think we've got any alternative, because at the end of the day, the Brenda Snipes, the Secretary of Elections, or the person in charge of the elections, to allow this person to get away with the, in my view, with the criminality. This is not right. It's not right. We cannot allow this. We have to stop this. And if the people in charge won't stop it, then we must step in and stop it. You know, it's just the way it is. What more can I? I mean, look, the latest news, in case you haven't heard, car rental, Avis employee finds a provisional ballot box and election signatures, provisional ballot box and election signs, I'm sorry, in the back of a returned Broward County car. And you know what? The press, or I shouldn't say the press, Laura Loomer and others with her were denied access. They selected, well, okay, we're going to allow so-and-so in, but Laura Loomer, you can't come in. Laura Loomer and Jacob Engels were tipped off and drove to the airport, but were denied entry. The media is refusing reporters entry into the area. Think about that statement for a second. That's right. That's what I said. This is being reported by the Gateway Pundit. The media is refusing reporters entry into the area. What did you just say? The media is read that sentence again. No, that's correct. Media now being denied access to cover the discovery of provisional ballots from a returned rental car linked to Broward County government. Broward Sheriff Scott Israel. Gee, where do we know that name from? Controlling what media can and cannot get in. And of course, Scott Israel said, hey, Laura, you ain't going in. Okay. But hey, and I'm using this as an example. Hey, Jim Acosta, come on in. Laura, you're not. You see, so I go back to some of the postings. And again, I'm naming names. I'm naming entities. I'm naming websites. And this is my opinion. You had the website of Free Republic, which is a forum supposedly of conservative Republicans. Maybe it was never conservative, but just Republicans. And I read there on this forum. And to me, that this used to be, look, I used to think that this was a fantastic resource. But now it's become this petty, you'd have to go through pages upon pages upon pages of just crap. And I mean crap. Crap postings to get to any meat, or you have to dig through the crap postings to get to the intellectual discourse. I expect that on Democratic Underground, because that's all they do. I look at the different polarities here. I look at, and I know there are other websites out there, but I look at that, and I look at some of the comments where, you know, gee, Laura Loomer is she's got no credibility. Jim Hoft, Gateway Pundit, no credibility. These by, you know, the foundational people at Free Republic. How dare you? How dare you, in my view? And, of course, Democratic Underground, that's just a mass sewage pit of just, Jesus. I don't even know how to describe it. Yeah, I'm naming these. I'm calling these sites out, and this is my opinion. This is not. I mean, this is based on my observations. So if you want to, whatever, you know, go ahead and stand in line. Sue me. Stand in line. Pick a number. I'm done. I've got all. Everything I've got is on the line, frankly. But that's just me. All right. So, But here's the thing. Loomer showed up. Gateway Pundit, assets for them, showed up. Pictures are taken. They're undeniable. You can't deny these. Oh, and you know what? By the way, what the heck is a provisional ballot anyway? Have you wondered? You see the signs. You hear the reference. Provisional ballot. What's that? Well, a provisional ballot is used to record a vote when there are questions about a given voter's eligibility that must be resolved before the vote can count. That's what a provisional ballot is. It seems kind of straightforward, or does it? Why in the hell do we have provisional ballots? You are either registered to vote, you've got the right to vote as a U.S. citizen, or you don't. See, now, according to Wikipedia, some of the most common reasons to cast a provisional ballot include, well, the voter's name does not appear on the electoral roll for the given precinct or the polling place because the voter is not registered to vote or is registered to vote elsewhere. Well, if you're too stupid to change your friggin' address, in my view, I question your ability to cast a vote in the first place. Or quite simply, the voter's eligibility cannot be established or has been challenged. You're either eligible or you're not. How difficult is this? The voter lacks a photo ID document in the various jurisdictions that require one. The voter requested to vote by absentee ballot but claims not to have received or cast the absentee ballot. Okay, that might be legitimate. But again, what, your dog ate your ballot? The voter's registration contains inaccurate or outdated information, such as a wrong address or a misspelled name. Fix it. When did this start? The Federal Help America Vote Act of 2002. Well, remember the elections of 2000, where Bush versus Gore, Supreme Court hanging chads. You remember that pablum, right? That garbage. All right. Well, this is kind of an outgrowth of that. The Help America Vote Act of 2002 guarantees that in most states, a voter can cast a provisional ballot if the voter states that he or she is entitled to vote, eligible to vote. Now, whether a provisional ballot is counted is contingent, of course, upon the verification of that voter's eligibility. So they've got to go through and say, okay, is they eligible or not? No? Okay. No, out you go. But look, and I'm not going to get into the history of this, but you can see how our elections, and by the way, it goes back even further than 02. Okay, you go back into the Clinton administration with motor voter and all of this nonsense. However, I suppose the formality of provisional ballots, I'd say 02, but the informality or the build up to that back during the Clinton administration. But see, this is why the George Soroses of the world and other millionaire radicals have deliberately infested the secretaries of state all across the United States. You attack the voter's system. You attack the very structure, the very element, I should say, that is the cornerstone of our representative republic, and you start to attack the nation from within, and that's what's been happening. So just so everyone knows, of course, you know, this is what's going on. And we need, we need to fight back against this. Because we are watching the radical Democrats, which are nothing more. When I say radical Democrats, think communists. We're watching the communists take away our representative republic. They're stealing our elections. And I'm not okay with any of this crap. And then again, you've got 5 days after the election, radical communist Kristen Sinema, this admitted bisexual who hates her own state, who hates the military, who loves the Taliban. Her lead is growing. Why? It's not who votes, but who counts the votes. So do we have what it takes to go in and to create a McMinn County 2.0 or a Battle of Athens 2.0? Do we have that? Do we have what it takes? Has it come to that? Is that going to be necessary? General Anthony Tata. Veterans fought for our right to vote. Don't let Democratic Florida election officials take it away. I posted a picture of my grandfather. I never had the pleasure of knowing him. He fought in World War I. Posted a picture on Hagman PI, at Hagman PI, on my Twitter feed. Man, I see, just from his facial features, it's amazing, the older you get, you look at people and you, I don't know, you can see the similarities. But anyway, taken on or about Armistice Day 1918, 100 years ago. Think about that, 100 years ago. That's my grandfather. Fought in World War One. I was on my father's side. And I wonder, having not known the man, just only hearing stories of, you know, I wonder what he would think today. I wonder what the people who fought in World War One would think today of this, of what this country has become. You know, I took this weekend, and I got to tell you, folks, I slept a lot of the weekend. I really did. I was just wiped out. Mentally and physically and emotionally, just creamed. So I took my best buddy, Lady, the studio dog, who's with me early this morning, came with me early this morning. And, you know, we're at the studio. We came to the studio early. By early, I mean 4:30 early. And energized, re-energized. We're both looking at, you know, I'm looking at now, we've got to make, whatever move we're going to make, we've got to make our move now. And this is not a call to arms. This is not being a domestic terrorist. What I'm saying is we've got to game this out, plan this out. What are we going to do to fight this corruption? Will it be a McMinn County? Will it be in Athens? Are we being pushed into that corner? And is that not, and let me ask this, is that not constitutionally permitted? In fact, not only permitted, but mandated by the Constitution of the United States? I believe it is. Look at the Constitution. Hillsdale College has got had a great constitutional course about the Constitution, but we are mandated by the Constitution to restore that law and order, to restore the rule of law where it does not exist anymore. Speaking of that, I want to get into some things with Matt Whitaker, the Attorney General, Conservative Treehouse, by the way. I think I follow that website quite a bit. In most cases, Sundance, I look at him and I say, you know, I kind of wish I would have said that or written that. Had I had the time, I might have written something like that. It's no different. He's got a piece on Matt Whitaker and about the Attorney General. And this is something that everyone needs to be paying attention to, because I said my last program, between now and the time of the swearing in of the Ocasio-Cortez, in my view, morons, or this Democratic Congress, there's a lot that needs to happen, and I suspect will happen. But to what extent? Because when I look at things, I look at this Pelosi-led Democratic group coming into power, and the first order of business, or one of the first order of businesses, is, of course, to get rid of President Trump through impeachment. And, of course, obstruct everything. The wall, screw the wall. Immigration, yeah, we're going to let everybody in. That's the Democratic, if I can use that term, Democratic agenda. That's what's taking place. But wait, there's something going on. Don't lose hope, because hold on a second. What did President Donald Trump do just right? I mean, hours after the midterm, after the polls closed, it's 18 hours after the closure of the polls, or 12 hours after. What did he do? He made some changes in the Attorney General with the Department of Justice, replacing his Attorney General, accepting his resignation. And I am so sick and tired of the socialist communist left attempting to rewrite the federal statutes about our Attorneys General, the Department of Justice. President Trump had every right to ask for and accept the resignation of Jeff Sessions, which he did, and replace him with Matt Whitaker. Now, according to law, Matt Whitaker has 210 days to serve out as acting Attorney General. And I'm watching now whether or not somebody like John Ratcliffe, which I think is perhaps one of the front runners, if not the front runner for the Attorney General spot, will be sworn in or will be appointed and have to go through the judicial review and approval process, the advice and consent process. Certainly not Chris Christie, certainly not Rudy Giuliani, certainly not any of those people. But I'm looking at Ratcliffe, or hey, they might even want to keep Whitaker on. I doubt that, but I suspect that it's going to be Ratcliffe. That's my opinion. Or it might be, well, there are others, of course, that we could look at. But this is important to take a look at right now. So I will defer to conservative Treehouse Sundance, his article of yesterday, the importance of Matt Whitaker versus the administrative state. Let me retitle that. The role of Whitaker versus the deep state. A distinction without really a difference. Anyway, before continuing on, I just want to welcome and tell you about a great new sponsor of the Doug Hagmann Radio Show. It's grove.co/HH. Let me say that again. grove.co/HH. Now, they've got a fantastic line of cleaning products, of products that we use every single day. You and I use every single day. My wife and I love this collaborative, this website, the products they have. Mrs. Meyer's products, for example. And by the way, they've hooked us up, listeners to this program. Folks, if you go to grove.co/HH, you will see we've got reserved for you a special four-piece seasonal Mrs. Meyer's offer just from us. Mrs. Meyer's hand soap, dish soap, multi-surface spray, scrubber sponges. And I got to tell you, the products are second to none. You know, Thanksgiving is coming. The holidays are coming. Think about the aroma of fall, of Thanksgiving, of Christmas. Just consider, take a deep breath. How about your home? Does it smell like the holidays? Well, now you can have it clean, looking good, and smelling just like the holidays. This year, Mrs. Meyer's released a brand new seasonal scent for fall, pumpkin. We use it right now. It's just, it's such an aromatic fragrance all through the house. It smells exactly how it looks, clean, simple, and cozy. The toasty scent, it's distinctly fall, but it smells so good, I'd be tempted to use it year-round. The packaging, by the way, is spot on. The color of pump, high-filling. When you place your first order of $20 from Grove, you'll get a free fall set in your choice of scents, apple, cider, pumpkin, or mum. It includes Mrs. Meyer's fall hand soap, dish soap, multi-surface spray, and more. Plus, if you spend $39, you'll also receive Grove Cleaning Caddy. It's a great little caddy to organize all of your favorite supplies. They've got you covered. Grove has you covered for all of your cleaning and organizational needs as you head into fall, into the holidays, into Thanksgiving, into Christmas. Find an amazing selection of natural household products from brands like Mrs. Meyer's, as I said, Method, and Seventh Generation. Now, here's what you got to do. If you've been thinking about trying Grove Collaborative, this is your chance. I would urge everyone to go to Grove, grove.co/HH, and just look at the great lineup of products they have. And when you sign up using my link, that's grove.co/HH, you'll get the free fall set plus free shipping and a 60-day VIP trial. But you've got to hurry because this offer expires now. It expires now. Folks, go to grove.co. I mean, today's the last day. Okay, so if that's not motivation enough for you, I don't know what. Go to grove.co/HH right now to get started. I'm going to tell you, this is one of the best moves that my wife and I made. Grove.co/HH. All right, Mueller, the entire team was put into place by Rod Rosenstein back in 2017. The reason we've got Robert Mueller was, well, the specific selection of Mueller was an outcome of recommendations and advice from FBI Chief Legal Counsel James Baker and Andrew McCabe, the FBI Deputy Director, who, by the way, is under criminal referral. Anyway, when you look at it historically, this, and specifically against the backdrop of the illegal activity that we know about, there was a motive of self-interest within Baker and McCabe, specifically to cover for the 2015, 2016, and 2017 DOJ and FBI activity that preceded the firing of Comey. And writes Sundance, and I have to agree on this, from the initial perspective of self-interest, Mueller's role had three essential aspects. Now think about this. First, to create an investigation. Remember what we're dealing with here, please. We are dealing with a coup attempt by the intelligence community, not just in the United States, but worldwide, to keep President Trump out of office, failing that, to remove him from office, to delegitimize President Trump. You know this, and you're probably tired of hearing me say this. So an investigation was created, and just by creating the investigation, it was then used as a shield by any corrupt FBI or DOJ official who would find themselves under congressional investigation. Former officials being deposed or questioned by Horowitz or Congress could then say, I can't answer that because the investigation is ongoing by the special counsel. So there is this defense that Mueller has permitted or has provided for various officials. And then the second part of this, the second essential aspect, use the investigation to keep any and all inquiry focused away from the DOJ and FBI that took place throughout 2016 and 2017. And I would even say, go back 5 years, okay? But anyway, at least since the announcement by Donald Trump that he was going to seek the presidential nomination. In other words, central aspect of this is to keep the media narrative looking somewhere, anywhere other than at the epicenter of the issues. I agree with that. In this way, Mueller provides distraction and talking points against the Donald Trump administration. Imagine, just for a second, I was thinking about this early this morning. Imagine not having a special counsel right now. How different would things be right now without a special counsel? What would be the leftist talking points? Yeah, I know there are plenty, but without that appearance of alleged impropriety by Donald Trump as given by the special counsel, well, you know, that's a big deal. Anyway, the third essential aspect is to use the investigation to suck up, absorb any damaging investigative material that might surface as a result of tangentially related inquiries. Example, control the exposure of evidence against classified leak participants like Senate Select Committee on Intelligence Director of Security James Wolf. In this way, Mueller provides the cover for the institutions and the administrative state, the deep state, the criminals themselves. Mueller is running cover for. In all of those objectives, writes Sundance, the Mueller special counsel has been stunningly effective, which leads to a discussion of the role of Rosenstein. That rat, in my view. All of the visible activity being conducted by Rosenstein has been going in one direction and only one direction, and that direction has been an intentional effort to keep as much of the damaging evidence hidden from public view and away from congressional oversight. We've seen this. We've seen this constantly. This slow walking of material by the Department of Justice under Jeff Sessions. Because why? Because Sessions recused himself. You know, the shelf on the elf kind of person recused himself from all things. So it's Rosenstein calling the shots at the Department of Justice, at least in these matters. Devin Nunes, God bless that guy, back in October of last year, October 7th of 2017, Devin Nunes pointed out that Rosenstein's motive were to keep hidden the documentary evidence he was requesting President Trump to declassify. Rosenstein communicated to President Trump that Special Counsel Mueller would consider any declassification of documents as obstruction within his investigation. Now, that should anger everyone out there, okay? Because think about this. The public has a right to know. There's no sources and methods at risk here. What we're talking about is information that would clearly show the details of, well, the elements that comprised the various, or the FISA warrant against Carter Page and other documents related to that, that really served as the springboard for this special counsel. So in other words, one series of documents that should be declassified and should be shown to the public in unredacted form, so the American public can see exactly what the Department of Justice did, whether they perpetrated a fraud upon the FISA court or whether the FISA court was complicit in this. But America needs to know, and we deserve to know, and we have the right to know. And the only reason we have not been given that opportunity to know is because of the elf on the shelf, Jeff Sessions. I don't know who came up with that, whoever did great. And Rod Rosenstein. But folks, let me tell you something. According to just my conversations with people that I know in D.C., documents are coming out in short order, imminent. When I say imminent, I don't know if it's a week, a day, a week, a month, but sometime between now, I believe, and the January 20th of next year. Now, President Trump did back down from requesting declassification of documents and agreed to allow Horowitz to review and outline the material that was being discussed. And according to Sundance, he writes, that's a key point. And fair enough, that is a key point, because the takeaway from this framework tells us that Rod Rosenstein, and by the way, I believe Rosenstein has got a lot to worry about. He still's got his job at the Department of Justice, but I do suspect that Rosenstein's going to be embroiled potentially in a criminal referral himself. That's just me. Okay, but anyway, the takeaway from this is that Rosenstein and Mueller wanted to put the most important part of everything under the purview of the Inspector General. And there is a strategic aspect to this, which has remained undiscussed, but brought up at Conservative Treehouse. However, before getting to that motive specifically, the current corrupt Department of Justice activity with respect to Rosenstein and Mueller is not isolated to the FISA abuse and documents themselves, okay? No. The agenda to hide corrupt activity also flows outward and can be found in Department of Justice behavior surrounding people like James Wolf. Remember James Wolf, that long-term security guy for the Senate Intelligence Committee? He was caught leaking the classified FISA application to the media in a series of, 82 separate texts to that reporter that he betted, that whorish reporter, in my view, Allie Watkins, who he was having an affair with. That's right, I said it. I'm done. Look, I'm done. I'm done messing around. So if you want to tune out, tune out. Despite overwhelming evidence, Wolf was not indicted for the more serious charges of leaking classified intelligence. No. Look at the indictment, okay? The decision was made by Rosenstein because Jeff Sessions was recused. an intellectually honest review of what was and is taking place would certainly indicate that the current Department of Justice, controlled by Rosenstein, they needed to hide what was taking place as evidenced in the original indictment. And Wolf became the benefactor of all of this. And by the way, he became the benefactor of current Department of Justice officials who are protecting the institutions, the deep state, the criminals, and hiding the fingerprints of the officials and congressional allies. For example, Vice Chairman Mark Warner, who engaged in activity back in 2016 and 2017. And these corrupt DOJ and FBI officials are not protecting Wolf as they are protecting themselves and their positions and their institutions. And this effort transparently includes Rosenstein. And you've got FBI Director Christopher Wray in this mix. And FBI Director David Bowditch. And current FBI General Counsel Dana Buente. And you've got a bunch of other carryover officials. And the efforts of Rosenstein, Ray, Bowditch, and Buente, and etc. to cover up the deep state institutional corruption extends far beyond the activity of the declassification request and shows up in the lack of substance behind the Wolf plea agreement. I mean, come on. Seriously? What did Wolf walk away with? A slap on the wrist for leaking this information to Allie Watkins, who I guess slept with this guy. And, you know, we know what you are. We just have to determine what the price is. So Sundance and Conservative Treehouse writes that there's a clear pattern, in addition to the disparity of outcome within the Wolf indictment plea deal. For example, redactions and material evidence provided to Congress, refusal to release material to Congress, fighting declassification of documents, refusal to discuss events with Congress by officials who hide behind the shield of the Mueller investigation, on and on and on and on. The Mueller agenda, the Mueller control agenda also extends into the two previous IG reports. You can see that in the writings. When Mueller, with Mueller being in charge of the ongoing investigation, the two previous IG reports, the first one, the investigation of McCabe, and the second one, the Clinton email FBI bias, could not outline anything tangentially connected to the Mueller investigation without first passing through his teams and his approval and his review. That level of Mueller influence kept the most severe elements of investigative sunlight away from public review. And these officials defending the administrative state, they're still there. They're still working there. How do we know? We know they are in place because of their influential conduct. It's visible. It's tangible. Three of them are inarguable. Number one, redacting the innocuous, highly damaging information within Lisa Page, Peter Strzok text messages and emails. Controlling what records Horowitz has access to, in addition to who he is interviewing. You know, the inspector general is only as effective as the material he has to review. Look, I know in my work as an investigator, I am only as effective as the people that I'm allowed to speak with. If there is an attorney client, or if there is for example, working certain cases, more on the civil as opposed to the criminal side in this case, when a person is represented by legal counsel, you've got to go through legal counsel in order to get to that person. So the legal counsel at that point acts as this barrier. And so it acts as a barrier, and you can ask questions all day long, but you're not going to get answers to the questions you need answers to. Well, this is the case on the criminal side via Mueller. And as I mentioned earlier in a Sundance laid out earlier. So this is what Horowitz is up against, even on the criminal side. And then, of course, look at the executive summaries of the two previous IG reports. What a bunch of crap. What a bunch of watered-down, diluted crap. You know, it's still diluted crap is still crap. But again, yeah, you have to understand who is in charge. Now things have changed. Things have changed. But before I get into that, when you look, and I'm continuing with the Conservative House article from yesterday, when you look at the collaborative efforts of the current group of corrupt officials maintaining the administrative state, it was evident in the hit job against Justice Brett Kavanaugh. You've got Bromwich, McLean, Loffman, and so on, who were part of the Blasey Ford construct, clearly working with a set of current DOJ, FBI officials. Monica McLean and Blasey Ford. Look, this was a hit job to keep Kavanaugh off the Supreme Court. It was orchestrated by the very people who were orchestrating and are orchestrating this Russian collusion crap. It's as simple as that. I mean, on camera, Monica McLean, for crying out loud, it's undeniable, the hubris and the stench. All right. And then you got former Department of Justice lawyer Michael Sussman working with Perkins Coie on behalf of the DNC to feed information to former FBI legal counsel James Baker. Do you really need much more than that? I mean, you have to be intellectually bankrupt. No one's home up there. The synapses aren't firing the way they should be if that's not sufficient to show the corruption. Anyway, in essence, and against the understanding of how these officials manipulated the recusal of Sessions and Rosenstein, for example, Rosenstein, Ray, FBI Director Ray, FBI Director David Bowditch, Dana Buente, and so on, that network of political operatives within the DOJ and FBI, they've had free rein to do whatever the heck they wanted for the past 2 years, which is why there has been zero progress. That's why. Well, there's a new sheriff in town. Things have changed. Enter Matthew Whitaker. Now, some might say, well, he's part of the deep state. I heard that this past weekend. I understand where this might come from, but we've already seen certain things being done by Whitaker. You get the first IG report on McCabe, the second IG report on FBI misconduct. Sessions was no input, done, recused. Third IG report, looking into FISA abuse. Now we have Whitaker replacing Sessions. And the background on this is on March 28th of this year, Michael Horowitz, the Department of Justice OIG, formally announced an additional investigation of how the U.S. Department of Justice and the FBI engaged with FISA, with a Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court, in matters relating to the FISA Title I application filed against Carter Page. However, one part of the OIG notification was overlooked by a defensive and IC-compliant media. As part of this examination, the OIG will also review information that was known to the Department of Justice and the FBI at the time the applications were filed from or about an alleged FBI confidential source. Additionally, the OIG will review the DOJ and FBI's relationship and communications with the alleged source as they relate to the FISA applications. Well, 2 months later, on Monday, May 21st, driven by demands and questions from President Trump, Rosenstein added a significant mandate to the Inspector General review. He expanded the original FISA to include looking at whether officials within the IG or the intelligence community might have unlawfully used human intelligence assets to spy or surveil the campaign of President Donald Trump. Remember, folks, remember when I sat here behind this microphone and I said there were human intelligence assets, spies in the campaign of Donald Trump inserted there by members of the deep state. I told you that. I said there were people, human assets, people sent into the campaign as spies for the deep state. Now it's coming out by way of, hey, wait a minute, we got to expand and see if human assets were indeed spying on President Trump. And they were. So here's the bottom line. With Whitaker, it's going to be different because there ain't going to be no watering down of the IG reports coming out. In the executive summaries, written post-report, not going to be diluted. What's going to be released to the public are going to be different in tenor and content and than we've seen before. Ends Sundance, ends the article. Whitaker is now President Trump's most valuable weapon in the ongoing battle against a bipartisan and corrupt administrative state. All of this, I believe, will be exposed before year's end. Watch for the fireworks. There's an overt coup there has been, and there still is, against President Trump. And again, just to wrap this up and tie things together, the media is at the forefront of this, which is why you're seeing such hostility by the media, because they know everything is about to be exposed, and they are complicit in all of this. It's coming. Now, some might say, and I would agree, the IG reports seem to be in the same, Chris Farrell of Judicial Watch, and this is noted by one of the commenters on CTH. Chris Farrell of Judicial Watch said on Lou Dobbs a number of times, I've heard it, you've heard it if you've watched Chris Farrell, IG reports are where the truth goes to die. Well, that might be true, and it has been true. But now with Whitaker, we're going to see. We're going to see how far we can change this. And the reason I have hope is because look at the outright head-exploding reaction to Whitaker post-Sessions. There's something coming, and they know it. The media knows it. Specifically, the media knows it. And most assuredly, the Democratic incoming power knows it as well, as do all of the deep state members of the deep state. They know it. It's coming. Most importantly, President Trump, who has telegraphed this, and I go back to his press conferences, last one where Acosta, where all eyes were on Acosta, of course, but the underlying aspect of that press conference tells me changes are in the works. And President Trump knows that with a Democratic-led House, there's going to be some obstruction, a lot of obstruction, and a lot of cantankerous fighting. So he's going to have to do something before January 20th in order to offset what's coming. And I do believe he will. And I do believe declassification of the documents in question is in the offing here. And I think that when that hits, there's going to be a lot of embarrassed and potentially criminally charged individuals, including many, or some in the media, I should say, not many, but some in the media. So to tie things up, here we are looking at a country, by the way, on this Veterans Holiday, federal holiday, 2018, 100 years post-World War I armistice. But as we sit here in 2018, we've got a decision to make. We've got to either fight. In my view, we either have to fight and do so in a manner that allows us to restore the integrity of our Constitution and restoration of our representative republic. Well, there's no or. See, there's no or. Well, there isn't. There is an or. The or is we just give up and allow them to take over, to take down our representative republic and institute this communist utopia I've spoken about. That's the or, and that's not acceptable at all. In the closing minutes, I ask that you pray for the victims of the fires out west, out in California. I ask that you pray for the safety of our firefighters, our first responders. I ask, follow, by the way, James Woods on Twitter if you're out there. He's doing a lot to assist in the efforts to find people. I mean, he's just doing a great job. James Woods, the actor, on Twitter. If you have family or friends, neighbors, pets, livestock affected by the fire, fires, plural, we have to pray for our country in that respect. You've got fires in the east, political fires, and fires, of course, inside the Beltway. Fires of different kinds, but they really, in my view, they're related. They're related because they're all potentially and already catastrophic. Kevin from New Hampshire, thank you. Others, Walt, thank you. Others who've sent emails, thank you. By the way, Kevin, thanks for that great picture. Folks, if you like what you heard, please share this on social media. Follow me at HagmanPI. Also, tune into our flagship show every night, 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time, The Hagman Report. Follow us on Twitter, Hagman Report, HagmanReport.com, HagmanReportLive.com. God bless you. Have a great day.
The Doug Hagman Radio Show is brought to you by The Hagman Report. Tune in to The Hagman Report weekdays, 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time. For more information, go to HagmanReport.com. That's HagmanReport.com.